New York, London, Paris, Munich, everybody talk about
Reaching Up with Don Fess. Don Fess.
This is Don Fess, and we're reaching up again right now. All together in 204 countries with great in-person guests and music.
Of your praise, the hypocrisy of your festivals. I hate all your show. Away with your noisy worship. Away with your noisy hymns. I stop up my ears when you're singing them. I hate all your show. Instead, let there be a flood of justice, an endless procession of righteous living, living. Instead, let there be a flood of justice instead of a show. Close when you're praying. You sing right along with the band. You shine up your shoes for services. There's blood on your hands. You turned your back on the homeless and the ones that don't fit in your plan. Quit playing religion games. There's blood on your hands. Instead, let there be a flood of justice, an endless procession of righteous living, living. Instead, let there be a flood of justice instead of a show. I hate all your show. Sins of blood red. Let's argue this out. You'll be white as the clouds. Let's argue this out. Quit fooling around. Give love to the ones who can't love at all. Give hope to the ones who got no hope at all. Stand up for show. I hate all your show. Instead, let there be a flood of justice, an endless procession of righteous living, living. Instead, let there be a flood of justice instead of a show. I hate all your show.
People who want to withhold rights from gay and bisexual people have never walked in their shoes. My guest, author of The Cross in the Closet, Timothy Kulik, was a fundamentalist Christian, a straight one. And then he spent a year walking in gay, lesbian, and bisexual people's shoes. And it changed his life, and it changed his faith. Timothy, welcome to, or actually you're welcoming me to the Hawthorne Theater in Portland, Oregon. You have an interesting story, so tell our listeners first what your background is.
Okay. I was raised in the Independent Baptist Church movement in Nashville, Tennessee. I was raised very, very conservative. We thought that Jerry Falwell was liberal. Go figure, I ended up at Liberty University for my freshman year of college. And I worked at a church as a college coordinator in Nashville, very conservative church, obviously. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, saw the light, so to speak, through an encounter with a friend. And I guess that's what we're interviewing about, the book, Crossing the Closet.
So tell us about the encounter with your friend and what happened.
Very cool. I started attending a karaoke bar about 3 years before, and I would go there every Tuesday night. I met this young lady about 6-7 weeks prior to this encounter. And she pulled me outside one night and said, "How can you be a Christian?" Before I could answer, she told me that she had just come out to her family and that she had been rejected by her family, disowned, basically excommunicated from her entire life. And she was crying on my shoulder, and as she was crying on my shoulder, my first reaction was to phase her out, stop listening to her, and to think about all the verses I could explain to her to show her that she was an abomination, to convert her. Thank God I didn't get the chance to say any of these things to her before she had to leave. But
to you at that point, gay people
were
like guilty of the greatest sin there is.
Well, not necessarily the greatest sin. I mean, I don't believe any sin is worse than another, and a lot of Christians say that. But it was definitely a sin that separated you from the ability to have a relationship with God. So the words gay and Christian were mutually exclusive terms. And so every gay friend that I had, I was constantly trying to convert and praying for, and I would tell, you know, I would just try to track them down and do whatever I could to try to help them see the light, so to speak. And so she came out. When she left the karaoke bar that night, I felt like a spiritual kick in the gut and this epiphany that the voice inside my head telling me those things to tell her wasn't God. It was this religious programming inside of me that I self-diagnosed as being my inner Pharisee. And at that point, I realized that I had to get rid of that voice at all costs. And the only thing that could come to mind of something radical that I could do would be to understand and to actually empathize. Sympathy wouldn't be enough. So I decided to come out as a gay man to my friends, family, and church, even though I'm straight.
Okay, let me stop you there, because you said Pharisee, and for those mm-hmm. people who don't know, Jesus had a pretty tough time with the Pharisees, who were really into very in-the-box mm-hmm. tradition, but not necessarily very righteous.
Yeah.
Were very spiritual, and he called them, said they were like whitewashed tombs.
Yeah, and a brood of vipers. Was that John the Baptist or Jesus? I think it was one of the other said they were a brood of vipers. They specialized in the law. They were the extremely pious, and so I felt like I had been trained to be this behaviorally modified creature that went around. I didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't do anything like that. I tried my best to stay out of the world as much as possible. And this karaoke bar became a really almost a church to me, where I was meeting people, and I thought I had conquered a lot of my more Pharisaical beliefs. But as soon as she came out and that happened, I realized that I actually hadn't, that I had just kind of ignored it for a while. So
what made you decide to, perhaps for lack of a better term, go undercover as a gay man, mm-hmm. so you could experience what being gay was like?
Yeah. It has a lot more to do with the label of gay than being gay or pretending to be gay. I knew that what I had to do was to come out, find out how the label of gay, if that was the only thing that changed about me, how would that affect my life? It was the only possible way I could empathize. Now, I did take it a little bit further, and I did this project for a year. So I wanted to have everything be as natural and organic as possible. I didn't want to force situations or cause conflict. I just wanted to see what happened as it happened. So I took a year to do this. And I went undercover. I tried to take as many precautions as I could to be as sensitive as I could to the people around me. I came out in January of 2009 and then came out as straight in January of 2010.
So. Your own mother believed that you had crossed over to the other side, if you will?
Actually, the interesting thing about it was all these things that clicked and fell into place. When I, the 2 months prior to coming out of the closet, I was so nervous and racked with nerves about what was about to happen that my sleeping patterns were erratic. I was irritable. I was freaking out. I was very depressed and full of anxiety. As soon as I actually came out of the closet, that stuff kind of went away because I felt like I had passed the point of no return. And so when I came home and I told my family, I was a lot calmer and a lot more at peace. And so they just assumed, oh, that was what was bothering him for the past few months. We've been worried about him. And so they didn't really question it. And then as soon as I enlisted my my gay acquaintance, Sean, who became my pretend boyfriend for the year, that kind of sealed the deal for them where they believed it lock, stock, and barrel.
And a purpose for Sean also was to keep you from getting hit on, right?
Well, yeah. No, not necessarily to keep me from getting hit on, because that's going to happen, but I knew that I was kind of like a bull in a china shop. I was going into the LGBT community. I had to be sensitive to the fact that I didn't want people developing feelings for me or anything like this, and then find out that I was lying to them, and I didn't want to hurt them. So Sean protected me from some uncomfortable situations, but he also protected everybody else around me in kind of keeping a little bit of a barrier there between us from me and the other folks that I made friends with. So
tell our listeners during that year what you did and what you experienced.
I tried to immerse myself as much in the LGBT community as possible. So I was a barista at an LGBT cafe attached to an LGBT bookstore. I spent 4 or 5 nights a week in the bars hanging out with and making friends. I was on a gay softball team in a gay softball league that only allowed 2 straight players per team. I protested in New York with Soul Force, a gay rights activist group. And I put on a marriage equality event in Memphis, Tennessee with Jay Baker and Connie Waters. Jay Baker is the son of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. He's a really well-known ally in the LGBT community. I just tried to give myself every single opportunity possible that would come up to be around and interact and get to know these people that I had always kind of kept myself apart from and shunned in my life. And I let those relationships, those friendships evolve as naturally as possible, and I heard their stories and experienced life with them, and ultimately those are the things that changed my perspective.
Reaching Up with Don Fess. Don Fess.
Somewhere a child needs your help with food, school, and health. And what if at the same time and for the same small monthly donation, you could also help many American kids and keep our voice of love and working together on the air? All for just the same $38 a month. You can do all that, but only by clicking the Compassion banner on our www.celebrateradio.com website. So be an even much bigger blessing. All 3 needs met for just $38 a month. Please do it today, exclusively at the Compassion banner at celebrateradio.com. My guest, author of The Cross in the Closet, Timothy Kulik.
What did you experience emotionally during that time? And how did that change your perspective?
Well, I think the major thing and the biggest thing that I experienced emotionally was what it was like to be in the closet. Now, you know, for all the LGBT listeners out there, you know, I knew I had an expiration date on this experiment and that I could come out and say that I was straight. So, you know, I liken my view of being gay, you know, like looking at the roof of the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel through a keyhole. You know, I saw, I got a tiny glimpse. I got a bigger glimpse than I feel like any other straight person has gotten. It was a very limited, you know, experience, which is why I try to make sure and say, you know, this book is about how the label of gay impacted my personal life and journey. But being in the closet, even with that expiration date, for a year was crushing, you know, to know that I couldn't go to the grocery store and be walking down the produce aisle and potentially bump into the chick that I was going to end up marrying, you know, that to not being able to have even the possibility of love was huge. And that's what I ultimately realized it was about. It's not about sex. Sexual orientation is kind of a misleading term, because it's not about sex. It's about love. It's about relationships. And that's what I had to learn. And it was it pushed me lower and lower and lower every day that I was in the closet. So that was probably the biggest part of it. The other big part of it was, you know, I had a few friends that disowned me, wouldn't talk to me, or told me that they weren't going to talk to me anymore. But the majority of the people that I was friends with just didn't ever talk to me ever again. From the time I came out on, they heard the news and I was cut out of their life. And, you know, it's reminiscent of Dr. King's quote. In the end, it's not the words of our enemies we'll remember, but the silence of our friends. And that silence was deafening. As soon as I went through it, and was feeling it, I didn't realize just how important community was. And when you're cut off from that, it was a very hellish experience.
Now, you also met some gay Christians.
Absolutely.
What were they like, and what did they impart to you?
That was probably one of the more enlightening and incredible aspects of the year, was to meet gay Christians that that had a faith that was so far surpassing my own. These people who shamed me in their spiritual walk, they were so loving. They embodied the fruits of the Spirit in ways that I had never done in my life. They were Jesus to me. There's an instance in the book where I walked into a karaoke bar, and I saw a drag queen on stage singing "Our God is an Awesome God," and it launched into 30 minutes of the most intense worship music I had ever experienced. And everybody in the audience, this might be a Bible Belt thing, but everybody in the audience had their hands up and their eyes closed, and they were worshiping just like, you know, I used to worship at church. And that, I feel, is when the scales fell off my eyes. I call that chapter Jesus in Drag. And in hindsight, she probably wasn't a drag queen. She probably was transgendered, or but according to my limited understanding at the time, that if I feel like a male is in women's clothing, that automatically connotates drag queen. That was the quintessential moment. I think the most powerful moment in the entire year. It's the chapter that I've gotten the most response to from conservative Christians and LGBT folks alike.
And what kind of response so far are you getting from conservative Christians?
I've had a few conservative Christians either write me or post things on my Facebook wall, saying, you know, just giving me scripture and saying, what do you think of this? You know, and they try to bait me into an argument, and my only response at this point is, you know, have you read the book? And when they say no, I'm like, well, don't talk to me until you read the book, because you have no, you know, there's no way we can have any kind of interaction. I think that's also how I was when I was a Christian. I would use scripture and then I would hide behind it. I wouldn't interact with people on their terms or on terms to have a conversation. I automatically began an argument or a conversation where I knew I was completely right and they were completely wrong, so I didn't have to listen to anything they had to say. And that's not what Jesus called us to. So.
And that's, I think that's really something very important about listening to people, mm-hmm. rather than closing off mm-hmm. to them and continuing one's own assumptions,
yeah.
which are usually stereotypes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was editing the book, you know, I was talking to my editors and they said, you know, Tim, you got to realize, you know, that everybody is the main character in their own story, and we play a supporting role, and we've got to try to capture that in a few places that we haven't. I hadn't. And that really opened my eyes, even after the fact, that our involvement in each other's lives is a privilege, and not, they don't owe us anything. Nobody owes us anything. I think a lot of pastors make that mistake, where they feel like it's their job to shepherd their flock, but in shepherding their flocks, they take an unnormal and unhealthy amount of control over the lives of their parishioners. You know, there are certain pastors in Seattle that I could say that about, in terms of church discipline and you know, just all sorts of things. And I've heard so many stories from LGBT folks in the last few days, even, who have been emailing me and saying, this is my experience in the church, you know, and it's been really hard to hear, because I love Jesus, I love my faith, and I love my fellow Christians, and to know that Jesus is being so misrepresented is really... really hard to hear and hard to understand. So I guess that's where I'm at right now, is trying to you know, restore some faith in the faith.
I'm sure you know who Dan Merchant is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a good friend of
the
mine.
The filmmaker of Lord Save Us.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that film, which is still being shown around mm-hmm. the country and still getting lots of reaction,
mm-hmm.
he basically posited how has the religion of love
mm-hmm.
kind of been so twisted mm-hmm. into something else. We also sit here not knowing what the outcome of the 2012 presidential election is, but once again these hot button mm-hmm. social issues are coming up, as they always do.
Mm-hmm.
Getting past all that
mm-hmm.
and getting back to spirituality and the spirituality of Jesus and mm-hmm. the Gospels, what do you want to tell people now? Whether they're straight, gay, don't know, whatever.
I think the important thing is straight, gay, religious, non-religious, God loves you. You're made in the image of God. Nobody can take that away from you. You were born with an inherent worth and value. And no matter if somebody says they speak for God or not, if they tell you otherwise, they're lying to you and they're going to answer for that. The important thing to realize is that to the LGBT community, just because somebody believes that gay is a sin according to their biblical interpretation, that doesn't mean they're a hateful bigot. I hear these trigger words thrown around a lot from both sides, and it's really hindering the conversation, and it's hindering people's ability to be in community with each other. So, you judge people by their fruit. If they're mean because of their beliefs, then yeah, they're hateful bigots. So try to, you know, show grace on them. The best thing that you can do is to do what my beautiful friends have done for me, and that's just to be there for me in my life and show me love and show me Jesus and to let the Spirit do the work. Billy Graham said it's God's job to judge, it's the Spirit's job to convict, and it's our job to love. Same applies to Christians. Christians need to learn that a lot of what you've heard about LGBT folks is based off of the reputations of a very select, tiny minority. And, you know, the majority of LGBT folks live in the suburbs and live quiet, respectable, awesome lives and are great people. And you know, you would be able to sit down and hang out and have dinner with them and never have the issue come up. And you guys would be able to enjoy each other's company. So we need to look at each other as people. And we need to respect that, like I said, the intrinsic worth of the other first and foremost. I think that's where I came to. The book, The Cross and the Closet, ended up being less about the gay issue and more about the nature of prejudice, because, you know, even 6-7 months into the experiment, I was so comfortable with LGBT folks and in that community. But when I went back to visit a church, I found myself looking for things to have a problem with and hating the people around me, even though none of those people specifically had actually hurt me. And I realized that I hadn't changed or conquered my bigotry or my prejudice. I'd only switched the object of that. So we have to be very, very careful about, you know, what we're thinking and who we are and what we believe about other people and you know, treat others the way you want to be treated. It's the golden rule in the Bible, but it's karma and it's common sense in every other culture in the country, so, or in the world.
And as if I couldn't guess, just tell our listeners as we conclude, what happened to your faith? Did it grow? Did it stay the same?
I've never felt closer to God than I have after this experiment and after this whole process. And the reason for that, I think, is because I was finally challenged to figure out what it is I believe, what I believe, not just what I've been told. So I had to seek out, you know, and study scripture. I had to hear alternative points of view, study some other religions, these kinds of things that ended up strengthening my faith in Jesus. I think Jesus is the most radical figure, loving, you know, in terms of politics, in terms of love, in terms of social justice, that the world has ever seen, absolutely, hands down. And so, you know, I feel much closer to God. I feel much closer more stable in my faith than I ever did before. And I feel like being, you know, being attached to the label of gay for a year saved my faith. And my LGBT friends, they saved my faith. So that's ultimately where I've come to, and I feel very fortunate for it.
You may or may not find this odd if I characterize what you did, as unconventional as it was, as surrender.
I, I, you, I felt the Lord telling me to do something. I did it, and the fruits of it lined up with what I had always been taught but never actually applied. And I think, you know, we really do need to walk in the shoes of our neighbor in order to love them as we love ourselves. Also, you know, the more you love yourself, the more you're able to love your neighbor. You know, it's the aim of our charge is love, 1 Timothy says. You know, and certain persons have swerved from this by teaching the law, and they don't know what they're talking about. It's a pretty, that was me. You know, it's a pretty convicting passage. So yeah, it definitely is about surrender, and you know, surrendering yourself not only to God but to your community and to the other, and trying to be an instrument of good and love and peace and embodying the fruits of the Spirit. So.
And the book, of course, is called The Cross mm-hmm. in the Closet. Mm-hmm. You can Google it and find it all over the web, including your Facebook page and lots more.
Facebook.com/Timothy Keurig.
Thanks so much, Timothy, for being with us. Very enlightening. And it's always great to hear when people step out of the box, because you can't put God in the box either. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
When you pray, some believe Muhammad, Allah, or Buddha are the way. Is there no God or a pantheon of gods up in the sky? I'll honor your choices and you can honor mine. Whether you are red, black, yellow, brown, or white, a man with a husband or a woman with a wife. We can debate till the end of time who's wrong and who is right. Or I can honor your choices and you can honor mine. We all want the same things for life. We want peace, love, and prosperity. But can we give up? I need to be right. Give the world a present, give the gift of your acceptance. Give the world a present, give the gift of your acceptance. Some believe that God's a him and some say he's a her. Does God live here in our hearts or out in the universe? Gandhi was a Hindu, Martin Luther King, a Christian. Regardless of religion, they knew love was the myth. We all want the same things from life. We want peace, love, and prosperity. But can we give? We can debate till the end of time who's wrong and who is right. Or I can honor your choices and you can honor mine. They call you Israeli and American. I look at you and I don't see your country, I just see my friend. I pray we're in each other's lives for a long, long time. Cause I honor your choices and you honor mine. We all want the same things for life. We want peace, love, and prosperity. But can we keep
better listen, my brother, 'cause if you do, you can hear their voices still calling from across the years. And they're crying across the ocean, they're crying across the land, and they will until we all come to understand. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. There are people in darkness. They just can't see the light. If we don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to feel for each other. Let our brothers know we're here. Got to get the message, send it out all loud and clear. None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free. If one of us is chained, none of us are free. It's the single truth we all need to see. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. Well, I swear to you, salvation isn't very hard to find. None of us can find it on our own. We got to join together, spirit, heart, and mind. So all the souls who are suffering know they're not alone.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. None of us are free.
If you just look around you, you're gonna see what I say, that the world's getting smaller each passing day. It's time to make some changes. It's time we all realize that the truth is shining right before our eyes.
None of us are free. None of us are free. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free. It's the very heart of humanity. None of us are free if one of us is chained. None of us are free.
This is Don Fass. Join us next weekend and keep reaching up.
And be sure to tell us where you're listening. Write me at reachingupradio@gmail.com. reachingupradio@gmail.com.
This is the Celebrate Radio Network.
Radio Network.
From Seattle to Paris, Bangkok to Jerusalem.